Okay, we
Okay.
are live.
Hello, Jerry. How are you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. Yeah, 5:40 in the morning here in Austin, Texas. I was just out on the porch. The sky is beautiful. The stars are out. The clouds are out. It's having a good old time. Nice and cold here.
Well, it's pretty steamy and hot here in Queensland, Australia, but I expect the stars. It's too cloudy tonight to tell. But I am interested. I have a query for you.
Yes.
What do you think of my audio tonight? And you tell me, and then I'll tell you why I asked.
Your audio is just fine. It's good. It's a little crisper than usual. Your voice is quite distinct.
Haha. I am talking to you from my brand new AirPods.
Isn't that great? Tim, you got some too?
No, we thought we'd just get one set and see what we thought of them before lashing out for a second set. But I think I could be getting some at some stage. We've got lots of credit with Apple because we traded in our old iPhones. So we'll just try out these for a little while. But it's a sexy little package. It's really a fantastic gadget. Where are you guys, Sarah?
Well,
okay.
The little black box, little white box. It's slightly smaller than I expected, and it's got a lovely click on the lid when you flick it up, and then when you nearly close it, the magnetic latch just pulls it tight closed.
Oh.
And The earbuds feel comfortable. They're in my ears. I'm shaking my head right now, and it doesn't feel like they're about to fall out at all. I think the lack of the drag of the cable is a much bigger factor than we had anticipated.
Well, that is really good news, because I know you were concerned. You've never found a pair of earbuds that really suited.
No, I never had. And I've been using the earbuds that came with my iPhone 7 to try and get used to them. And that's what we've been podcasting with, since the iPhone 7 arrived. But after 30, 40 minutes, my ears do start to hurt. So I'll tell you how I feel at the end of this podcast, and we'll see how we go.
Okay, we'll get a full report. Okay, cool. So
excellent.
Fake news. We're talking about fake news today. The history is long. Fake history, otherwise known as propaganda, has been around for a long time. I think the first really effective use of it, I think, was Attila the Hun. Attila the Hun was a barbarous fellow who, liked beheading people and doing whatever. He used people to spread the word about how horrible he was before he got to an area he was invading, and people after a while just pretty much laid down their arms and said, here you go, keys to the city, etc. And I think it's just become more and more popular since then. And boy, fake news. In the center of this whole thing, I think, is Facebook and to a degree Twitter. But I think I think it's been going on in the current era a lot longer than that. One of the examples that we talked about before was just how crazy the news is regarding Apple and how tilted it is. They can't make one little mistake and wow, everybody just jumps on them. They're through, they're doomed, they're terrible. The stock goes down, it goes up, it goes down. You see what I'm saying?
Well, don't you remember back in the day, before Steve Jobs came back and resurrected the company, and even after Steve Jobs came back, but before the iPhone, you couldn't read the word Apple in any website without beleaguered in front of it.
Too true. Too
and
true.
It was like the two were joined. Beleaguered Apple was all you could read about. And now that Apple is such a success, and you can't say beleaguered anymore, it seems to be that the headlines are really skewed. The articles sometimes are not so bad. It's the headlines that are really clickbait or headlines to get people in, to sucker people in.
Well, I couldn't disagree with that. It's It's lamentable. It's terrible. It's all kinds of different things. But yeah, I often wonder what's behind all that. And is it just commercial interests? What do people get out of doing that, I wonder? What do you think, Tim?
Well, as you say, it has a long history. I was thinking about this in anticipation of this chat, and I thought, why a couple of things. Well, for instance, I found an example. So I'm looking at one here. Fewer cars are parked at malls. Bad for Apple? And I thought, that's hilariously weak. And there's a thing, I don't know if you've heard of it, called Betteridge's Law of Headlines. It's just one of these things. You shouldn't take it too seriously, but it's quite amusing in the sense that if a headline ever asks a question, the answer is always no. In this particular case, they have a quotation from Tim Cook, which is much more serious in addressing this. And Tim says, even if a particular data point were factual, it would be impossible to accurately interpret the data point as to what it meant for our overall business. There is just an inordinate long list of things that would make any single data point not a great proxy for what's going on. And so, yes, fewer cars are parked at malls. Bad for Apple? Well, it might be. It's just an incredibly weak observation. And the chances of anybody, well, I suppose even being bothered to do the research that would find out whether that were true or not, is just seems very slim. So I think that a fundamental reason for a lot of this stuff is that Apple, people are interested in Apple. They like their Apple gear and they click on Apple articles. And so I think it's just a craven seeking for it's clickbait. It's just a desperate quest for attention.
Page views, you think?
Yes. Now, the other thought I had was the Macalope, which a lot of people might have heard of, is a blogger, writes humorously, currently under the banner of Macworld, I think. And the Macalope takes articles every week, sometimes a couple of weeks, a couple per week, and dismantles their weak or fake news and points out why it's silly. And I was thinking, he's been doing that, he or she has been doing that for years and years, and it's got such a long history with Apple that I began to think, why do we care? And I think fundamentally, it's just the sheer injustice of it, because it's not just the articles about Apple. It's the fake news all over the place that you see now. It's a corruption of sensible dialogue. What do you think?
Well, I definitely agree with you about the corruption of sensible dialogue. I disagree with you that it's people interested in Apple that are generating these page views, because I think there's Apple haters out there like Rob Enderle and John Dvorak, and they will publish anything that they think can be taken as anti-Apple and know that they'll get lots of hits from the Apple haters out there.
Yes, the people who hate Apple are still interested in Apple.
Wow.
And they want to spin anything that they can see against Apple. But I've got you had your article there, Tim. I've got an article in front of me from Business Insider. Now, Business Insider, again, is famously anti-Apple. So that's always a good for a clickbait article. This one's titled, 8 Reasons Why Google's Pixel is Better Than the iPhone. And now in the third paragraph, he says, oh, by the way, I'm comparing it with the 6S, not the iPhone 7, because I have more experience with the 6S. And nothing's changed anyway in the 7.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, it says the performance between both phones is comparable, and the 7's camera upgrades aren't as important as the Pixel's features.
What? Portrait?
Well, not just portrait, the quality of the lenses and everything in the iPhone 7s was a huge upgrade. And the
color
performance
gamut
of the iPhone 7s blows any comparable phone or practically any laptop out of the water. So what he's saying is that the Google Pixel only stands up if you compare it to an iPhone that's more than a year old.
Well, that's interesting and timely, too, because this last week, we're on AT&T, Mary Jane and I, here in Austin, and we're in an area that's just a little outside the city, so we have spotty everything out here. LTE on AT&T is sometimes not. Sometimes we get 4G, all that stuff. And plus, you know, we pay a hefty sum for our data plans. So I thought, well, I'll go over to T-Mobile. They have the most innovative business plans. They don't have the best network in the United States, but they're improving. I thought, well, I'll give them a shot. And so while I was in there looking at their plan, which, by the way, is unlimited data, period. There's no there's no nothing. I mean, I said, well, you slow it down after so many gigs, right? He said, we used to, not anymore. And I said, wow.
Wow.
Really, that's for LTE.
LTE
unlimited.
Yes. Oof. I know. So anyways, as I was talking to the guy, he said, well, you know, what phone do you have? I said, I have the 6S. He said, well, I said, I got this Chromebook for Christmas. And, you know, I'm kind of curious about what's going on the Android side. What's a comparable Android phone? I said, would you consider it to be the Pixel? And he said, well, I'm going to have to tell you the truth. He said, I've got an Android phone right here. And the comparable to the 6 or the 6S is certainly not the Pixel. He said, that's just not the same phone. It doesn't have the same performance, doesn't have the same specs. Doesn't, you know, there's so many ways it's not as good a phone as the one you have now. I would stick with your phone or, you know, get something else.
Huh, wow.
I know.
That's interesting.
Right? Well, I think the handicap, see, here's what's going on. It's kind of like, you know, in golf, and you guys are golfers, so you understand handicaps. So, yeah, if you really, let's say Tim really smacks a good 300-yard
drive. In my case, it's golf clubs.
Well, let's pretend for a second. Let's just say that Tim can really smack a long drive. He can hit a 300-yard drive in his sleep. And Sarah, you're happy to get 200 yards. And so he handicaps you. He gives you so many strokes on a round of golf to, you know, make up for the difference in how far you can drive and hit the ball. And I think that's kind of what goes on here with these things, too. I think Apple has been hitting these 300-yard drives for so long now, and these other companies are trying to catch up, and they're doing everything they can. They're changing their business models. They're starting to make their own hardware, because the only way you can compete is have the hardware and the software. You can't rely on another company to do it for you. So even getting close, any time these other vendors get close, the press just handicaps them, and they don't review them the same. You know, if there's a one teeny little thing with any Apple gear, oh, terrible.
Yeah, well,
right?
I agree with that from end to end, except for one mistake you made right at the beginning, which is that Sarah actually goes around in several strokes fewer than me whenever we play around in golf.
Day.
So I just thought we would, I thought I'd better straighten that out.
Well, you know, what's the golf association? The L something. There's too many things to start with L now. No, PGA. I'm a PGA caddy. I'm a PGA caddy. So, you know, when I get down there to Australia, I can help you with that, Tim.
Yeah.
And,
well, we've
helping me?
It sounds like you're beating the socks off of this guy. So I think you know, I got to help him out.
Oh, okay, fair enough. All right. Well, yes, I think you've brought up the question now of the false equivalency, and people, you know, they hold Apple to a completely different standard to the other phones or to the other companies, and so what's what's good for another company is bad for Apple. And when Apple does it, it's terrible. And when the other companies follow suit, as they inevitably do, then they're just leading the market, leading the technology challenge. And you've totally ignored the fact that when Apple did that, you said it was completely rubbish. But here's another trend of Apple, fake Apple news. Well, that really annoys me. Now, it's not fake Apple news as such. It's fake Apple headlines. If you search for tips Apple doesn't want you to know, you will find hundreds and hundreds of sites all saying, 16 iPhone tips and tricks Apple doesn't want you to know, and, top 10 hidden features in iOS 10 that Apple doesn't want you to know, 10 secrets Apple doesn't want you to know. And you think, what the hell? I mean, Apple built all these things. Apple engineers worked for months to put all these features in the phones or in the iOS. And now you're saying Apple's trying to keep it secret from you? What world do you people live in?
Well, yeah, I can't say what they think the motivation is. Once again, I think it's just provocative headlines trying to get people to read their articles. But I think part of it, Tim Cook said in an interview that people were trying to milk some information out of him, and he said, let's let it be a surprise. We don't have enough surprises in our lives, which I don't necessarily agree with. But I think we got some big ones this last fall. So, yeah, I think that that's part of it. It's whimsy. It's a surprise. It's something cool. And I think Apple learned a long time ago that there's like an underground of neat little tips and tricks and stuff that people discover, Easter eggs, whatever you want to call them. And it's great. It's word of mouth. It's the raw enthusiasm of the thing that gets people to, show up and wait in line and all that kind of good fun stuff. And I do agree that there's not enough fun in some of this stuff. And I think that's what it is. Of course, it's hardly anything nefarious. So, yeah.
But the thing is, if you read these sites that say, all these tips and tricks Apple doesn't want you to know, they're all full of features and abilities of the iOS or of macOS that Apple has told people about. So it's nothing secret. It's not an Easter egg. It's not a list of Easter eggs. It's just a list of features.
And so they're not even
say
cool.
That Apple doesn't. No. Well, I mean, some of them are cool, but Apple has told us all about them. They're all on Apple's front page. So why they say Apple doesn't want you to know, I can't imagine.
Wow. That is pathetic. You're right. Yeah, that is totally stupid. Just to shift gears here just a little bit. We've had talks in the past weeks about, what's going on? No desktop computer. All this, right? All this stuff. About,
yes, I was desperate.
We have
to
been very gloomy
to make this
about
point.
The desktop.
Go.
Well, okay. Here's the thing. One illuminating, one little beacon of light in a lot of this stuff is I've been listening quite a bit to the podcast that Neil Seibert does called Above Avalon, and he is one of the few unique voices in the Apple blogosphere or podcastosphere, whatever you want to call it. And he has distinctly different takes on these things. He's not doom and gloom about any of it. He's trying to actually understand why Apple does what it does. And his a priori assumptions are, hey, these are not stupid people. They're not going to trash their business. They are hardly impetuous. I think you could say that when Steve was around, but you can't say that about Tim Cook's Apple. They are studied. They are measured. It's not to say they don't surprise and shock and delight and what have you, but what they don't do is trash their own business. So he feels strongly that a lot of what Apple has done in 2016 is just to double down on the iPhone and to really cement their position in that market, and he feels they're going to be doing things to really make it more accessible to larger numbers of people, and then in 2017 we're going to see some of the new things and additions to the existing things come out, like you know, Mac Pros and various things like that. But none of it's going to pan out exactly the way we would think it's going to pan out because Apple's got something up their sleeve. And we talked about this a little bit before. So I would encourage listeners to check out his stuff. He does articles too, and he does a membership thing if you really want to get into it. And he's a stockbroker, hedge fund finance guy who also had a major in technology and decided after, you know, 5 years or so in some big company in downtown Manhattan that he would stick around his digs in Connecticut and start podcasting and writing articles because he thought he had something to say and he had a unique point of view. So for those, you know, who do succumb to doom and gloom, you might read what he has to say. And he's not a cheerleader. He's very rational, very objective. And he's got a cool podcast, so I'm going to recommend that.
Well, you did recommend one to us, and I didn't listen to it, but I did read a transcript of it. And as you say, he thinks that this year Apple has doubled down on the iPhone. And that matches with what we were saying in some of our doom and gloom podcasts a bit, you know, a few weeks ago, where it seems that Apple is putting everything into the iPhone and the only and everything else is just seen in the light of how much of an accessory it is for the iPhone. And but in another interesting thing that Tim Cook had a Q&A, an internal Q&A with Apple staff, which got leaked today. And he has reiterated their commitment to the desktop Mac, which is very interesting and very encouraging for those of us who are waiting for such a device. Go, Tim.
No, I just wanted to say that last thing that you said, which was that about Tim Cook's announcement. So basically, we were worrying about what he was going to do about the desktop, and we were speculating enjoyably about what might happen. And so on the basis of Tim Cook's comments, I can go back to our wild speculation and say, okay, well, in February, March, or April, or at latest the WWDC, we should get a bunch of new desktop stuff.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if what we had speculated upon it comes to pass in some form. I don't think we know exactly how it's going to happen yet, but I would, if I were Apple, I would have had a belly full of Intel's weird stuff with chips at this point. I would definitely be looking at ARM, or possibly, you know, Intel is doing some ARM work, so that may come to pass also.
Maybe, but if they're going ARM, surely they'd be better to go with their own ARM chips where they are in total control and they can really tailor them to their own operating system and their own internal...
yes, I think that that's exactly what Intel's going to be doing. They've just decided a little late in the game that they will do just that.
Okay. So. Interestingly, in Tim Cook's statement... He said something about the current iMac is the best desktop they've ever made, and he never mentioned the Mac Pro, which had its third birthday last week. That's its third birthday with no upgrade since it was originally released. So given that they have cancelled all their separate display stuff, they only use... They're only licensing LG and external monitor stuff now. I think we will see upgraded iMacs, but I think we may have seen the death of the Mac Pro.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Phil Schiller's got a little bit on the line there with his can't innovate my ass comment on that. But I don't know. I still think they're going to do something with it. I don't think they're going to surrender the pro line. That's really the heart of the Pro line right there, in my opinion. It would seem unlikely to me anyway that they would do it, but you know, who knows? As far as displays go, there could also be some moonshots going on within Apple, and I'm sure there are, of alternate approaches to display. I mean, that area is ripe for disruption. It's been commoditized, as we all know. So, you know, there could be something really weird in the offing. I know they're doing a lot with AR. Who knows what they're doing with holographic displays or whatever. They could be, you know, biding their time for a big jump. I don't think it'll happen, you know, this summer or anything like that, but 2017, that stuff could happen. That could definitely happen.
Well,
okay. So yeah, that said, we're getting to that point. We got 5 minutes or so left here. I thought, you know, hey, this is our pre-Christmas show. So, you guys just went, let's talk about the recommended TV and movies just for a few minutes, if you don't mind. You guys up for it?
Oh, definitely. Yep. Go for it.
So you guys saw...
Since we're just back from the movie.
Yeah, what'd you see?
We saw Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and I highly recommend it. It is not a kid's movie, so if you've got small ones that loved Harry Potter, that loved the early Harry Potter, it's not for them. It's for the people, kids that have grown up with Harry Potter and now are in their 20s. And so it's quite dark in places. The special effects and all the various beasts are just tremendous. And it's a good story.
Yeah, okay. 19, I don't know if you can hear me. 1920s New York is awesome.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Sure.
Ah, good. But it's not showing on my phone. But yes, the reconstruction of 1920s New York is just exquisite. I found it so brilliant that it was distracting. I was having trouble watching the story, looking at all the vehicles and the skyline and the Brooklyn Bridge. And I think it was the I have a suspicion at one point. Well, it was 1920s or was it early 1930s? The Empire State was built in 32.
I thought we saw the Empire State under construction at the end.
That's right. Yes, I thought so too. So that would date it because the Empire State went up really quickly.
Yeah. Well, relatively speaking, yeah, it was quite a feat. That's quite a building. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very amazing.
Well, in any case.
Okay, so. We do have one other movie on our holiday list, which we're going to see, I think, on Thursday, which is the new Star Wars.
Rogue One?
Yep.
Rogue One, yep.
Ooh, I've heard nothing but good stuff about that. So, yeah, good.
Yeah, me
good
too. We're trying to avoid spoilers. It's getting tricky.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
I'm going to say, I was, definitely. I was not enthused when they announced Rogue One and that it was going to be a kind of filler and it didn't have the main characters in it, and I thought, oh, they're just milking the audience while they take 2 years to make the next Star Wars movie, and I thought, nah, it's not going to be really my thing. And then I saw the first trailer and I thought, oh wow, this is going to be great. So I'm really looking forward to that, and we'll report back next time.
Oh, that'll be good to hear. Yeah. I want your take on that, because that's on my list also. What I have watched movie wise that I would recommend strongly is The Arrival. Did y'all see it?
Well, no,
that's on my
to watch list.
yeah, I won't say anything about it hardly, because I can't. Anything I would say would tip things one way or the other. So I would only say that. It's not your usual sci-fi movie, and most people know by now The Arrival involves the arrival of someone from somewhere else, a galaxy far, far away. And it's not your usual thing at all. Very different, and also has huge, beautiful things associated with it, involving all the senses and the intellect and the emotions that you would not have expected. I will say this, my friend Jay and I went to see it Sunday before last, and we really enjoyed it. That's the first time I'd seen it, and got out of the movie. He said, "What do you think?" And we talked a bit about it, and he said, "Well, that's the second time I've seen it." I said, "You're kidding." No. He didn't tell me, right? And he was very shroom. Yep. He didn't say a word about anything. So I said, "Wow." And we talked some more. We came back to my place and sat out on the porch and smoked a couple cigars and drank some coffee and talked some more about it. And we must have gassed about that movie for at least 2 hours. And then he said, "Well, what do you think? You want to go again next Sunday?" And sure enough, we went this Sunday again. And so that's the third time he's seen it. And the second time I've seen it.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm saying that because some of these movies that are out now have so much packed into them and so much subtlety, it does take a couple watches because you're so, like Tim said, you're so distracted by some of the things going on that you've never seen before or never experienced before that you miss some of the subtle cues that are going on. And sure enough, my second time through The Arrival, I picked up tons of stuff, you know, I hadn't seen before. And by way of TV also, I would say there's something similar but very different in the series called The OA. It's Netflix original.
Oh, I've heard about this.
The OA is worth a watch, and I warn you, it's highly addictive. If you can't eat just one. There are 8 episodes in this season. We don't know if there's going to be another season or not. And it's
what does OA stand for?
I cannot say without divulging spoiler information.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, again, you know, it's a genre of movie almost now. It's getting to be kind of a common theme, what they do in that movie. But, again, it's a very different treatment of it. Its production values are very interesting. Don't be put off by the first episode or any. I don't think you will be. It's intriguing enough to keep your attention. But it's filmed or whatever, recorded in the cinematography is a little different, the way they handle sound, the camera, and the way the storyline unfolds, different. It's different. Don't let it put you off. Keep going with it. And once you get through the first one, you're hooked. You can't not watch it. So, yeah, I definitely recommend those for the holidays. Nice binge watch. You could definitely watch. I watched 6 of them in one night. My friend Sean watched all 8 of them. He was up
till
2:30. Yeah, he couldn't stop.
Our son Jack has got me watching a thing on Netflix called Stranger Things, and I read online somebody said, well, for those of you who are waiting for the second season of Stranger Things, you should be watching OA. So I presume it's another sort of sci-fi or some sort of fantastic universe type thing. So it sounds promising.
Well, as Paul McCartney said in Help, I can say no more.
I can say no
more.
Well,
thank you for not spoilering.
Yes, yep. And by the way, the Beatles, just a little tidbit for Tim, since he's studying and perfecting their music to an extent. I would recommend also the Mona Lisa Twins on YouTube. They're a YouTube group.
Oh, really?
Yes. And this is the first time I have heard Beatles songs, and in fact, 60s songs in general, early 70s songs, done in a way that reflects the songs. In other words, these two, I call them kids. I think they're 19, maybe 20 by now. They are identical twins. And their parents are musicians. They grew up around music. And they started performing live at the age of 13. Dropped out of school at 16. Went to Australia to learn English. They're from Austria.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have settled in Liverpool. And they play the Cavern most Saturday nights.
Fair dinkum. Yeah. Well, As soon as this podcast is finished, I will go to YouTube. Mona Lisa Twins. Thanks. Good tip.
Yeah, and
Tim's got to go now.
Yeah, and two things.
We're winding up here, right?
Yes, we are winding up. They've got an interview in the, they've got an interview in there I'd recommend. And they've also, I would recommend three songs. You're Gonna Lose That Girl, which is, I can't believe that they did. That's a hard song to do. Drive
My
Car.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, me too. Drive My Car. They do an unbelievable version of that. And Day Tripper.
Mm-hmm.
Drive My Car and Day Tripper, they perform live. And they play all the parts. They're both guitarists. They're both drummers. They're both bass players. They can play anything in the band. And they sing. Only twins and sibs can sing harmony like that. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay,
guys.
Well, thank you very much.
Great podcast. Yeah, we'll do a
okay, well, this was our Christmas edition.
Yeah,
we'll get back before New Year.
All right. Check.
Well, happy holidays to everybody around.
Yeah, check out Sarah on Twitter. She's Trosware. She's got a beta going on. If you want project management, planning, and what have you software for the Mac, check that out. Tim is going to be talking to me over the week about Mona Lisa Twins, and I'll be enjoying the holidays here in Austin, where it's actually nice and cool. I like it when it's cold during the holidays. Too often it's balmy and not at all holiday-like. So you guys have a great one. Next week, we'll do the end of the year.
Thanks, Jerry.
Great.
Bye.
Okay, thanks for chatting, Jerry. Bye.
All right. Adios.